Hello, and welcome to the Foxworthy Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Fox. I'm here with Taylor Gaines, my co-host, also a writer for GainesvilleScene.com, writer of the Hidden in Plain View column. Today we're going to be talking about the X-Files revival on Fox. We are going to be talking kind of spoilery, so if you haven't seen the episodes, I think it would be best if you didn't want to know what happens in these new episodes if you stopped listening, went and watched, and then came back. I think I'm just going to start by kind of explaining that the show started in 1993. It ran for 9 seasons, and there were 2 films. One of the films was actually made and was released in theaters between the 5th and 6th season of the show. So there was actually, the show was still running when that first movie came out. And then the show ended, I think it was 2002, and then they made another film in 2008. But it was apparently very disappointing for longtime fans because it didn't really wrap up any of the story that they were hoping that it would wrap up in terms of the overall mythology of the X-Files. But this show was really popular. It came to Fox when it was kind of still a fledgling network. Fox had only been a network for about 8 years. And, you know, it made stars, obviously, out of Gillian Anderson and David Duchovny, both of whom have gone on to do other, you know, TV credits over the years. It's created by Chris Carter, and it has kind of a really interesting background as far as the writer's room goes. Apparently there's kind of this aura around the writer's room. There's sort of this legendary team. You know, Vince Gilligan, creator of Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, was on the writer's room for several years. Frank Spotnitz, who I guess currently runs Man in the High Castle for Amazon, also came out of that writer's room. Alex Gonza, who works on Homeland, I think created and kind of showruns that show on Showtime. So, you know, the show kind of was a descendant of something like the Twilight Zone, and it was built around, you know, they had these overarching government conspiracy storyline, you know, and there was all this mythology about aliens, and, you know, there was all these weird different types of aliens, and then they would also go, you know, certain weeks would just be kind of one-off cases that were considered monster of the week episodes that kind of tied up nicely, like procedural shows that we see today. I think it was maybe 2014 that Fox announced they were going to bring the X-Files back, and it was going to be a limited series, which is kind of a trend right now. It's a 6-episode event series. It started Sunday. They aired the first episode, and then Monday they aired the 2nd episode, and I guess there's 4 more weeks to go for that. So that's kind of the rundown of what this show is, and it's, in terms of its influence, I mean, in popular culture, it was an incredibly popular show in the 90s. It probably ran a few seasons too long. I think, you know, a show like Fringe, which was another Fox show, heavily influenced by the X-Files. I think Twin Peaks and the X-Files were both kind of these genre shows that were on at the same time that, you know, had this sort of kind of supernatural element to it. And interestingly, which we'll touch on later, Twin Peaks is also being revived over at Showtime. So I think we're going to talk now a little bit about the episode. So this is kind of where we're getting into the spoiler stuff. Taylor, I'm going to start by asking you, I don't think you really watched any of the original run of the show. So what were your feelings on this revival, this first episode, in terms of it drawing you in and you being able to understand, you know, where the story left off and where it's going from here?
Yeah, I've never actually watched an X-Files episode before Sunday night.
Not a single one?
Not a single one. I've always intended to watch the one that Cranston was in, because apparently that's a good Monster of the Week one, which I guess we'll talk a little bit about that later, because they have a history of sort of going back and forth between these Case of the Week, Monster of the Week episodes and these more mythology serialized style episodes, right? But yeah, so the first one, I have to, like, if I didn't know it was a popular show before, you know, obviously that's a big factor, whatever you're already thinking when you go into watching a show, but like, just on first blush, it was like, what was good about this? Like, why did people enjoy this before? Because the pilot episode was just really rough. Like, I know they had a lot of work to do, and I know you're also probably not supposed to call it the pilot since it's technically season 10 or whatever. Right. But it effectively functioned like a pilot, because I think the way it was presented was, it was at the very least like, hey, we're gonna catch you guys up since you haven't watched the show in 15 years or whatever. And more likely, or at least a little bit likely, is that they expect a lot of new people to just watch it, because there's a lot of dialogue in the first episode that was basically exposition or backstory, and basically every character, and I don't know if these characters are going to return, but the Annette Mahendru character and the Joel McHale character were both basically just saying things that would help the audience understand what was happening. Even Mulder and Scully were mostly just like, oh, the X-Files are closed. No, we can't go back to those days. We had a kid together, or whatever. Like, there's just a lot of stuff that you're just groaning because you're like, what? I remember thinking when I was watching the first episode that it was almost offensive how dumb the show thought that I was as someone who hadn't watched it before.
Right.
Because it was
over-explaining.
Yeah, it was just over-explaining everything. But I also felt like, and maybe this was just sort of his thing, but it seemed like Duchovny was like mailing it in the first episode where he had like no passion about anything. He was just like, oh, the X-Files checks are back? Like, cool. You know, I didn't get a read on too much of any of the performances, really, in the first episode, especially, like, we both watched The Americans, and we know that Annette Mahendru, I hope I'm saying that right, we know that she's a really great actress.
Yeah, she plays Nina on The Americans, and she showed up in this, and yeah, she's really good, but here she was just basically given...
She had nothing to do, really.
Nothing to do, really. Exposition.
Other than be the key to everything,
as exactly.
I think Mulder says. But I also thought it was odd, this is sort of a different note, but, like, they almost disowned the first 9 seasons of the show with the way that Mulder kind of acted in the episode.
It kind of seems that way, but it's also like a little muddled because then at the end they reveal, you know, that she does have alien DNA, so like maybe it wasn't faked and
yeah. But there's a point where he's like, oh, all those years we were chasing cases and trying to solve things, it was a total waste of time. And it's just like, oh cool, then I don't need to catch up on the show. I'm just gonna keep watching whatever these 6 episodes do.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of complaining about sort of the way that it sort of just conveniently it oversimplifies the original mythology that they were, you know, and they're just like, oh yeah, all of the stuff in the original run of the show, like all of that was just the government doing experiments and they were pretending that it was aliens abducting people to cover up the fact that they were experimenting on people with, you know, genetic mutation and hybrid humans. And there was a plot line in some of the later seasons, I think seasons 8 and 9, about super soldiers and some foolishness.
They all wanted to take over America or something.
Yeah,
I don't know, it didn't really make a whole there was like a 10-minute scene where they were just explaining what the whole conspiracy was, and I was just like, this is so stupid. Like, okay, so you've seen a good amount of the show. Like, what was your preference between the serialized stuff and the case of the week stuff?
My relationship to the original series is sort of interesting. My mom is a big sci-fi fan, and a lot of my taste for sci-fi kind of comes from her and the stuff that we would watch when I was growing up. And I do remember her watching some reruns, I think when it was in syndication when I was growing up. And there's an episode called Home, which I can't remember which season it's in. It might be the 2nd season of the original run, which has this sort of incestual family, and they're all sort of deformed, and it's sort of an infamous episode for being really bizarre, really terrifying, and that stuck with me for a long time, even though I was a kid when I saw it. And my mom and I kind of skipped through a lot of the seasons on Netflix, you know, in preparation for this revival series, kind of picking episodes we heard were, you know, we would look up, like, you know, Vulture top 10 lists of best X-Files episodes and kind of, you know, figure out which ones were worth watching, which ones made sense, the most sense. And I've seen a good amount of it, more than Taylor has, but I definitely haven't seen all 202 episodes. But it's definitely, I can see why it was popular and why it's still sort of revered as one of the great TV shows of all time, especially genre shows. I think for me personally, I do prefer the Monster of the Week format. I think it just works. As much as I don't really care that much for procedurals and that type of storytelling where you just kind of come in, do a quick story, and then it's out, I typically prefer more serialized things, but the mythology is just super, it gets super muddled over the 9, now 10 seasons that we have of this show, that it sort of isn't really even worth following anymore because it doesn't connect, it doesn't make sense, there's no arc, there's nothing to follow, the serialization is sort of dropped out. It's like, I don't even remember what the last, you know, bit of information that really mattered, you know, dealing with the mythology was. What's interesting about these Monster of the Week episodes, and I think this is something that I've read a lot about, you know, leading up to this revival series, there's been lots of stuff published, you know, internet writers about this, that the anthology sort of one-off each week being different, that format kind of lends itself to having a variety of different types of episodes. You can have a funny episode, which, you know, there are some of the writers were known in the writer's room for writing more comedic stories, you know, and letting the chemistry between Gillian Anderson and David Duchovny sort of, you know, their one-liners to each other and stuff like that. You know, that stuff really made people engage with the show more.
That was allegedly more Vince Gilligan on the comedic side, though, right? Because he's not there now, obviously. He's working on Better Call Saul.
Well, and I believe the one that we're going to get next week, which I guess the critics have seen the screeners, there's the 3rd episode of this revival series that airs next Monday, apparently is really actually excellent and a little bit better in quality than the first two episodes that we've seen so far. And apparently it's more comedic and it's more in line with some of their, you know, their better kind of monster of the week stuff. And I just think that that's interesting. I know there's an episode, of course I should have written this down, I don't remember the season or the episode number, but the episode title is Clyde Buckman's Final Repose. That is widely considered to be the greatest X-Files episode of all time. I know a lot of people just think it's a brilliant episode of television, and it is its own story. It's a self-contained story. It's not really a monster of the week. There's not really a monster in it. It's about a guy who can basically see into the future and see how people are going to die. And it's just, it's really beautifully done. I did watch that one when I was kind of revisiting the show. But yeah, I think the Monster of the Week format is just, it's more malleable, you can do more with it, you have one week that's funny, you have one week that's more serious, and, you know, you can kind of try different things within the overall, you know, framework of the show.
Real quick, for those who are wondering, the episode you just mentioned, Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose, is the fourth episode of season three.
There you go, episode four of season three.
Right, and Home, the episode you're talking about a little earlier, is episode two of season four.
Another infamous episode, which that one I haven't rewatched, but I remember it being terrifying as a child.
And it is worth mentioning, critics haven't seen episode four yet, but the guy who wrote Home, Glenn Morgan, wrote episode four, and it's called Home Again. So
yeah.
Who knows what'll happen in episode four?
Well, apparently a lot of people have speculated that it might have something to do with that other episode, but apparently it doesn't. It's just sort of a coincidence that the title is there and it's the same writer.
I do think there's an argument to be made, and this is something we haven't really talked about, but for more like case of the week type shows, because when you think of procedural case of the week stuff, you think of like the really popular CBS shows, like the NCIS is the
CSIs,
even like, I don't know if they're still making Law and Order, are they? But
I believe Law and Order SVU is the only one that's still around.
Okay, but like,
yeah, they're spin-offs.
You think of all these shows that are like popular and like sort of like popcorn food, but like that aren't necessarily like critically acclaimed, or which is not like a bad thing, obviously. But like, I think there's room for really well-told hours, because every show has gone to this serialized form now, and a lot of it's just like not worth it. Where you're like, you're not enjoying your episode by episode experience. If you can do that really well and have like these powerful episodes, like you're remembering something that you saw, what, 10, 15 years ago, because it was like one powerful episode. Like, why don't more shows do that if that's what they're better at doing? Like, because X-Files seems like a show to me, who someone who's just watched these two episodes, like where the first one was all this weird mythology stuff, and like it sort of makes sense the way they're catching you up on it, but like it seems a little nonsensical. And then the second episode was this sort of Monster of the Week thing, and it was much more interesting. I mean, it kind of suffered from what a lot of stories like that do, where the person that's behind it all in the end is not as interesting as, like, you would hope. Where the kid was kind of bland. But, like, but generally speaking, like, I just think there's a lot more room for this, because it's sort of an untapped, like, thing in modern TV, where everyone's so on board with this serialization train that, like, there's a lot of room for people to do cool stuff like this. Like, even shows like Breaking Bad, and I know a lot of people don't like this episode, but have that Fly episode, which is very much
directed
like
by Rian Johnson, right?
Right, which is very much like a standalone episode that, like, you don't, it doesn't even really tie into the rest of the show, and a lot of people dislike it because of that, because they're like, keep it going, I want to see what's going to happen. But, like, I love that episode because it's just a great hour.
Yeah, I think the art of the episode and each individual episode as its own self-contained thing is something that's definitely been lost in television. Alan Sepinwall from HitFix wrote a really interesting piece on that. I think it actually kind of interestingly ties into a larger trend in pop culture in the movies, you know, with the Marvel movies. You have these Marvel movies, which are basically being run as if it was a television show. And I think that sometimes the individual films struggle so much to be their own thing and to just be one self-contained, interesting, engaging story, because they're seeding all these plot points that are going to come up in future movies. And that's, you know, the overall mythology of the, you know, the Marvel Comics stuff. And every movie, it's like every Avengers movie you watch, you're like, yeah, this is kind of fun, like I'm enjoying it, I'm entertained, but there's this nagging feeling that they're withholding things and they're pushing things further into the future for you to come back and keep watching,
like,
them.
Sure, we live in the age of the super fan, where everyone wants to watch every second and like analyze everything and go on their forums and blogs and like figure out every little thing. Like, that is true, but like, also, you look at the ratings and you're like, wow, like NCIS is still the most popular show. Like, I gotta think that if someone did a procedural well, that people would watch it. I don't know why everyone's really averse to it. But like, let's talk about this revival thing, because I think this ties into what you're talking about, because the movies have been doing something similar where they're like, oh, like Star Wars, we can redo Star Wars now. Like, let's do that and make $1 billion.
I do want to mention that from what I gleaned, I should probably look this up and give you more accurate information, but I believe at least the first episode, the ratings were pretty high for, I mean, I think they were better than what was expected. I think it was like 10 million viewers, which is pretty solid for a network show. And I'm not sure if the second one matched that or was maybe a little bit higher, but I think this show coming back, I think that people knew it was coming back, and all 202 episodes are sitting there on Netflix, and people were like, oh, I like to binge watch things. Let me binge watch 202 episodes of The X-Files, and I'll be ready for the mini-series, you know, also known as Season 10.
But, well, it is worth noting, I've just pulled the numbers up here, like, you would think NFL football is basically the most popular thing on TV every time that it's on.
Right.
So you would think the first episode benefited greatly from that, which it seemed to, because it had about 10 million viewers. But then the second episode, Monday Night, also had 9.7 million viewers. It had a 3.2 for adults 18 to 49, which without an NFL lead-in is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, it's doing well so far.
I think that that was part of why there's just an interest in this show. There always has been, even when the seasons weren't as good, the later seasons, you know, there were people who still held on to the very end, and apparently even those seasons had their moments where the ratings, you know, spiked and lots of people were still watching it. So, yeah, so moving on to this kind of topic of this trend of revival series, I mean, we've written down a list here of just a few recent examples. There's a glut of shows that have either been canceled or have ended that are now being revived. And by revived, we mean they bring back either, you know, the creators or writers and some of the key cast members and just continue the story. It's not a reboot in terms of they recast it and start a fresh story with the same title slapped on it. It's
because there's
a revival because it's literally being brought back and continued from where it left off, essentially.
If we jump into the reboot rabbit hole, then that's like a countless amount of shows.
Right, because lots of movies are reimagined as TV shows and all of that type of thing. So when we're talking about revivals, we're specifically talking about shows that their original run is sort of over. They may have been out of the public consciousness for some time or a lot of time in the case of The X-Files, and they're being brought back with some of the same key players that made it successful in the beginning to continue the story in some way. I mean, Fuller House is a Netflix property now. That's, I think, drops like February 26th. All of the original cast, essentially, other than the Olsen twins, are coming back. And they're just continuing the story of, you know, the characters from Full House just grown up. They're just older, and they're going to keep...
A sitcom that went off TV 21 years ago.
Yeah. Fox has done this now. They announced recently that they're bringing back a show called Prison Break that was on a few years ago that I guess was sort of popular. They're reviving that, and my understanding is the original actors are coming back, and they're continuing that. Fox also, I think it was two summers ago, brought back 24, starring Kiefer Sutherland. That had been successful for several years. They, I guess, canceled it, ended it. It was off the air for a few years, and then they decided, oh, we're going to bring it back. And they did, I think, a 13-episode sort of summer event series and brought it back with, you know, Kiefer Sutherland returning as Jack Bauer. Heroes just did this on NBC. What are some other ones?
I guess Arrested Development.
Arrested Development was a pretty high profile return on Netflix, but that didn't turn out so well.
It was always a kind of a cult show anyway.
It is, but this kind of is something I think we wanted to talk about is, especially in the case of something like the Arrested Development revival, that wasn't particularly good, I didn't think, and I'm not necessarily sure this X-Files revival is particularly good. I mean, the second episode kind of gave us a glimmer of hope because it was better than the first, you know, expositional episode.
Here's the thing about these, though.
Revivals.
It's really hard to do them when you don't actually get everyone from the original show back.
Yes.
I mean, we're hearing this now with Deadwood, too, which apparently David Lynch and co. want to, like, get together and make a movie out of this show that was on HBO 10 years ago or whatever. And there's a lot of skepticism because it's like, dude, if you can't get all the people back, it's not going to be the same. And, like, you watch Arrested Development Season 4, and it's like, it was really obvious that the only time they could get all the actors in one room was to shoot, like, two scenes, because they just keep going back to these two scenes throughout this season.
There's lots of like weird green screen sets where it seems like things are being melded together when people weren't actually like in the same room and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and like the Twin Peaks revival on Showtime almost broke down because I think David Lynch was like going to back out or something.
Mm.
Like, it's just, it's really hard. It's like you're trying to capture lightning in a bottle twice, because making a TV show that works is sort of insane.
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard to just make a good show on its own, whether it's a new show
or like to have a
reviving
good,
an old property.
To have a good creative team, a good production team, like even a good like financial, like business-related team, like the stuff you don't think about. And obviously, to have the whole cast there, like, it's all, when it comes together, it's sort of amazing. Like, there's a great interview with Mike Schur, the Parks and Rec showrunner, and obviously he's involved in The Office and Brooklyn Nine-Nine and a lot of other stuff that's recent or coming up.
Good comedy guy.
But he did a great interview with Andy Greenwald last week.
On the Andy Greenwald podcast. All right. I recommend that.
And he talked about that, how, like, he was, like, the most important person on Parks and Rec is this guy, like, Morgan Burnett or something was his name.
Oh, yeah. He was, like, said he was
the line producer on the show. A line producer,
which is, like, people assume is a thankless job, but,
right, you know, and it's, like, the person who keeps track of the budget and, like,
put how, stuff together.
Right. And, like, there's just so much stuff that goes into making a good TV show that, like, it's really hard to expect these reboots to be what they were before. Like, you watch Arrested Development season 4, not to get too much into just that show, but there's moments where you're like, oh yeah, this show, it was really great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because you're sort of grading it on a curve. Like, Arrested Development season 4 wasn't good compared to Arrested Development seasons 1 through 3,
right,
but it was still like funny. Like, it still was like,
it was still enjoyable. It just didn't have that spark.
Yeah, it's just not as special, and that's the hard thing. And who knows how the rest of this X-Files season is going to go.
Right.
But I, at least as someone who had never watched it before, watched the second episode and like saw glimpses of like, okay, like this is why people liked this, because there's the scene where they're walking through the hospital with all like the freaks sort of, and like,
yeah, the genetically mutated children that they're trying to heal and stuff.
And there's some really creative stuff going on there.
Makeup work is really good on that. Yeah.
And like, that episode was the right amount of creepy for me, where I was like, okay, I think I get what, at least one element of what people used to enjoy about this.
Yeah, I don't think we should dive too much into the, this has been talked about a lot recently with Star Wars The Force Awakens, is like sort of the limits of nostalgia and how much of reviving these things is just reminding people, oh, you liked this before, you'll like it again. Like, it's sometimes it's just sort of a shadow of its former self. I don't know yet that that's the case with The X-Files, because these next 4 episodes that we're getting could be all terrific, or a few of them could be good, and then, you know, the finale could be garbage. So we'll see.
Yeah, you just have to have a new spin on it.
I think we're going to wrap it up there. That's going to be the end of our conversation about The X-Files. Definitely check it out if you're interested. I think if you want to, you can kind of read a summary of the first episode to kind of get an idea of what it is. It's not necessarily worth the 43 minutes of your life. Second episode is much, much better. And apparently next week's episode, the third episode, is going to be terrific. I'm really actually looking forward to watching it, because it sounds like it's more in line with sort of the peak X-Files episodes that I remember and really enjoyed. Anything else we want to add? Anything else we want to plug?
I got a column coming up next week. I believe it'll be next week when we post this.
Probably Tuesday. Is that normally when they post?
Yeah, it'll be Tuesday, February...
Tuesday, February 2nd. Look for the Hidden in Plain View column from Taylor. Do you want to tell the people what this column will be covering?
It'll be covering a show they might not have heard of before and maybe should check out.
Are you not going to say the title?
I don't know. It's. I think I'm going to write about Man in the High Castle this week.
Which ties into the X-Files in some way, because Frank Spotnitz was worked on the X-Files for several years, and he is the showrunner of
the Amazon original. Let me try that again. Let me try to be better with the segue. Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at FoxworthyPod. You can follow me at FoxBJ_88. You can follow Taylor at Gaines Taylor. And we'll be doing another short episode this week talking about the FX comedy produced by Louis C.K. and Zach Galifianakis called Baskets. We're going to be doing just a quick take on that. And we'll be back next week. Thank you very much for listening. Have a good one.